THE WORM OROBOROUS by E.R. Edison. Chapter 20. King Corineus. Of the entry of the Lord Corineus into Owlswick, and how he was crowned in Spitfire's sapphire chair as viceroy of Gorice the King, and king in Demonland. And how all that were in Owlswick Castle did so receive and acknowledge him. Corineus, having completed this great victory, came with his army north again to Owlswick, as daylight began to fade. The drawbridge was let down for him, and the great gates flung wide, that were studded with silver, and ribbed with adamant. And in great pomp rode he and his into Owlswick Castle, over the causey builded of the living rock, and great blocks of hewn granite out of Tremordale. The more part of his army lay in Spitfire's camp before the castle, but 1,000 were with him in his entry into Owlswick with Corin's sons, and the lords Grow and Laxus besides. For the fleet had put across to anchor there when they saw the day was won. Corsus greeted them well, and would have brought them to their lodgings near his own chamber, that they might put off their harness and don clean linen and festival garments before supper. But Corineus excused himself, saying he had eaten naught since breakfast time. "Let us therefore not pass for ceremony, but bring us, I pray you, forthright to the banquet house." Corineus went in with Corsus before them all, putting lovingly about his shoulder his arm all befouled with dust and clotted blood, for he had not so much as stayed for washing of his hands. And that was scarce good for the broidered cloak of purple taffety the Duke Corsus wore about his shoulders. Howbeit, Corsus made as if he marked it not. When they were come into the hall, Corsus looked about him and said, "So it is, my lord Corineus, that this hall is something little for the great press that here befalleth. Many of mine own folk that be of some account should by long custom sit down with us, and here be no seats left for them. Prithee, command some of the common sort that came in with thee to give place, that all may be done orderly. Mine officers must not scramble in the buttery." "I'm sorry, my lord," answered Corineus, "but needs must that we bethink us of these lads of mine, which have chiefly borne the toil of battle. And well I weet thou'lt not deny them this honour, to sit at meat with us. These that thou hast most to thank for opening Owlswick gates and raising the siege our enemies held so long against you." So they took their seats, and supper was set before them. Kids stuffed with walnuts and almonds and pistachios, herons in sauce cameline, chines of beef, geese and bustards, and great beakers and jars of ruby-hearted wine. Right fain of the good banquet were Corineus and his folk, and silence was in the hall for a while, save for the clatter of dishes and the champing of the mouths of the feasters. At length Corineus, quaffing down at one draught a mighty goblet of wine, spake and said, "There was battle in the meads by Thremnir's Huge to-day, my lord Duke. Wast thou at that battle?" Corsus's heavy cheeks flushed somewhat red. He answered, "Thou knowest I was not, and I should account it most blamable hot-headedness to have sallied forth when it seemed Spitfire had the victory." "Oh, my lord," said Corineus, "think not I made this a quarrel to thee. The rather let me show thee how much I hold thee in honour." Therewith he called his boy that stood behind his chair, and the boy returned anon with a diadem of polished gold set all about with topazes that had passed through the fire. And on the frontlet of that diadem was the small figure of a crab-fish in dull iron, the eyes of it two green barrels on stalks of silver. The boy set it down on the table before the lord Corineus, as it had been a dish of meat before him. Corineus took a writing from his purse, and laid it on the table for Corsus to see, and there was the signet upon it of the worm Ouroboros in scarlet wax, and the sign manual of Gorice the king. "My lord Corsus," said he, "and ye sons of Corsus, and ye other witches, I do you to wit that our lord the king made me by these tokens his viceroy for his province of Demonland, and willed that I should bear a king's name in this land, and that under him all should render me obedience." Corsus, looking on the crown and the royal warrant of the king, waxed in one instant deadly pale, and in the next red as blood. Corineus said, "To thee, O Corsus, out of all these great ones that here be gathered together in Alswick, will I submit me for thee to crown me with this crown, as king in Demonland. This, that thou mayst see and know how most I honor thee." Now were all silent, waiting on Corsus to speak. But he spake not a word. Decologus said, privily in his ear, "O my father, if the monkey reigns, dance before him. Time shall bring us occasion to right you." And Corsus, disregarding not this wholesome rede, for all he might not wholly rule his countenance, yet ruled himself to bite in the injuries he was fain to utter. And with no ill grace he did that office, to set on Corineus's head the new crown of Demonland. Corineus sat now in Spitfire's seat, whence Corsus had moved to make place for him. In Spitfire's high seat of smoke-colored jade, curiously carved and set with velvet-lustered sapphires, and right of left of him were two high candlesticks of fine gold. The breadth of his shoulders filled all the space between the pillars of the spacious seat. A hard man he looked to deal with, clothed upon with youth and strength, and all armed, and yet smoking from the battle. Corsus, sitting between his sons, said under his breath, "Rhubarb, bring me rhubarb to purge away this choler." But Decologus whispered him, "Softly, tread easy. Let not our counsels walk in a net, thinking they are hidden. Nurse him to security, which shall be our safety and the means to our wiping out this shaming. Was not Galandus as big a man?" Corsus's dull eye gleamed. He lifted a brimming wine cup to toast Corineus. And Corineus hailed him and said, "My lord Duke, call in thine officers, I pray thee, and proclaim me, that they in turn may proclaim me king unto all the army that is in Alswick." Which Corsus did, albeit sore against his liking, knowing not where to find a reason against it. When the plaudits were heard in the courts without, acclaiming him as king, Corineus spake again and said, "I and my folk be aweary, my lord, and would betimes to our rest. Give order, I pray thee, that they make ready my lodgings, and let them be those same lodgings Galandus had when as he was in Alswick." Whereat Corsus might scarce forbear a start. But Corineus's eye was on him, and he gave the order. While he waited for his lodgings to be made ready, the lord Corineus made great good cheer, calling for more wine and fresh dainties to set before those lords of Witchland, olives and botargos and conserves of goose's liver, richly seasoned, taking from Spitfire's plenteous store. In the meantime, Corsus spake softly to his sons, "I like not his naming of Galandus, yet seemeth he careless as one that feareth no guile." And Decologus answered in his ears, "Peradventure the gods ordained his destruction, to make him choose that chamber." So they laughed, and the banquet drew to a close with much pleasure and merrymaking. Now came serving men with torches to light them to their chambers. As they stood up to bid good night, Corineus said, "I'm sorry, my lord, if after thy pleasant usage I should do aught that is not convenable to thee. But I doubt not Owlswick Castle must be irksome to thee and thy sons, that were so long mewed up within it, and I doubt not ye are wearied by this siege and long warfare. Therefore it is my will that you do instantly depart home to Witchland. Laxus hath a ship manned, ready to transport you thither. To put a fit and friendly term to our festivities, we'll bring you down to the ship." Corsus's jaw fell, yet he schooled his tongue to say, "My lord, so as it shall please thee. Yet let me know thy reasons. Surely the swords of me and my sons avail not so little for Witchland, in this country of our evil willers, that we should sheathe them and go home. Howbeit, 'tis a matter demandeth no sweaty haste. We will take rede thereon in the morning." But Corineus answered him, "Cry you mercy. Needful it is that this very night you go a shipboard." And he gave him an ill look, saying, "Sith I lie to-night in Galandus's lodgings, I think it fit my bodyguard should have thy chamber, my lord duke, which, as I lately learned, adjoineth it." Corsus said no word, but Gorius, his younger son that was drunk with wine, leapt up and said, "Corineus, in an evil hour thou art come into this land to demand servitude of us, and thou art informed of my father right maliciously if thou art afeard of us because of Galandus. 'Tis this viper sitteth beside thee, the goblin swabber, hath told thee falsely this bad tale of us. And 'tis pity he is still inward with thee, for still he plotteth evil gainst Witchland." Decologus thrust him aside, saying to Corineus, "Heed not my brother, though he be hasty and rude of speech, for in wine he speaketh, and wine is another man. But most true it is, O Corineus, and this shall the duke my father, and all we swear and confirm to thee with the mightiest oaths thou wilt, that Galandus sought to usurp authority for this sake only, to betray our whole army to the enemy. And 'twas only therefore Corsus slew him." "That is a flat lie," said Laxus. Grow laughed lightly. But Corineus's sword leapt half-naked from the scabbard, and he made a stride toward Corsus and his sons. "Give me the king's name when you speak to me," he said, scowling upon them. "You sons of Corsus are not men to make me a stock to catch birds with, or to serve your own turn. And thou," he said, looking fiercely on Corsus, "wert best go meekly, and not bandy words with me. Thou fool! Think'st thou I am Galandus come again? Thou that didst murther him shall not murther me. Or think'st I delivered thee out of the toils thine own folly and thwart ways had bound thee in, only to suffer thee lorded again here, and cast all amiss again by the unquietness of thy malice? Here is the guard to bring thee down to the ship, and well it is for thee if I slash not off thy head." Now Corsus and his sons stood for a little, doubting in their hearts whether it were fitter to leap with their weapons upon Corineus, putting their fortunes to the hazard of battle in Owlswick Hall, or to embrace necessity and go down to the ship. And this seemed to them to be the better choice, to go quietly a shipboard. For there stood Corineus and Laxus and their men, and but few to face them of Corsus's own people, that should be sure for his party if it came to fighting. And withal they were not eager to have to do with Corineus, not though it had been on more even terms. So at the last, in anger and bitterness of heart, they submitted them to obey his will. And in that same hour Laxus brought them to the ship, and put them across the firth to Scramsey. There were they safe as a mouse in a mill, for Cadarus was skipper of that ship, a trusted liegeman of Lord Laxus, and her crewmen leal and true to Corineus and Laxus. She lay at anchor, as for that night, in the lee of the island, and with the first streak of dawn sailed down the firth, bearing Corsus and his sons homeward from Demonland. End of chapter 20.